Let everybody get settled, and those of you who are going to turn your cameras back on can turn them back on. We will continue. Let's dive into facing and overcoming triggers. This workshop is called Untriggered, by the way. So it's the same process that you will notice as what we talked about in the first workshop. The same process. So first of all, you have to be aware that you're triggered, right? Like Pete Walker said, noticing the moment of triggering is more important than knowing the actual trigger itself. You might even need to say out loud, "I notice that I'm feeling triggered." Then notice what you feel in your body. Can you describe it? This will slow you down naturally. The describing the sensation is intentional. It's to slow you down. If you are being present with a feeling and you're like, "Oh, I feel this like hot ball of prickly nausea in my solar plexus, and it comes up into my chest and it's really tight, and then it goes into my throat and it feels like I've got a knot in my throat." Blah, like that slows you down. It forces you to be present with those sensations, which forces you to slow down, which is exactly what we want. So, describing that feeling or that triggered feeling in detail. Next, holding that part of yourself, right? Place a loving hand. You can even imagine love coming out of your hand and going into that part of your body where you feel the sensation. It may be helpful to remind yourself, "I'm safe. I'm having a flashback," or "I am triggered. I feel afraid, but I'm not in danger." The area of your body where the trigger lives is important. Because it's a part of you that doesn't feel very safe. This part feels unsafe and uncertain. This part may not actually realize that what's happening is rooted in the past and not the present. This part wants to be held and loved, not judged or shamed or rejected or abandoned or fixed. If you need to, this is an additional step. Because you're very triggered, you're very outside your window of tolerance, the energy is very big. You may want to use a nervous system CPR tool. That's what these are for. They're for your oh shit nervous system moments, like a trigger. In the nervous system CPR, you will find, I think it's nine different tools. Havening is one of them. Box breathing, shaking, physiological sigh. There's other tools that are in there. They're short little downloadable videos. You can put them on your phone. So you can literally have Lindsay Lockett in your pocket if you're like triggered, even if you're not at home. So you have to get back inside of your window of tolerance, though. You can't deal with stuff when you're like blown out of your window of tolerance because you don't have very much access to your prefrontal cortex when you're in that survival state. So you have to bring yourself back out of a survival state to give yourself access to the thinking, reasoning, analytical part of your brain. And then we're just noticing, is there a voice in your head? Is there a story? Is there a meaning that you're making out of what you're experiencing or what you're feeling? Is there a voice in your head that's blaming you or blaming someone else or shaming you or shaming someone else? Is it saying that you can't handle this because it's too much? Remember that your mind is a meaning-making machine. So what meaning is it making out of the trigger or about what you're feeling? Not the meaning of the trigger. I mean, it could be making a meaning of the trigger, but more often than not, it's making a meaning like, "Ugh, I shouldn't still be triggered by this," or "Ugh, I shouldn't still have this reaction," or whatever. This is bad. This means I'm not healing. This means, whatever. And then choose, make a choice. How would you like to respond? If you are in a pattern of reacting unconsciously, let's say you get like a big movement of anger through your body, but you slow it way down. Oh, I feel like my heart rate is increasing. I'm getting really hot in my neck and face. My shoulder muscles are tensing up. I'm feeling really angry right now. And normally, what I would do in this instance is I would be like passive aggressive and slam doors and like slam my feet whenever I'm, walking around so that everybody knows I'm pissed off. But instead, I would like to channel that energy into using my voice and asserting myself and asking for what I need and setting a boundary, maybe. So, this is your opportunity to be responsible for what you're doing. Responsibility is the ability to respond. So, we're getting ourselves out of that place of reactivity and we're going into a space of conscious response. So, that pause. Right? There's a pause from when you notice that you're triggered And before you make a choice, somewhere in there is a pause. And it may be at the beginning when you just like notice that you're triggered. Like that's your pause. That's what's slowing you down. Trigger energy is often very fast. And as I've said multiple times, awareness requires you to slow down. And slowing down itself is a choice. And maybe if you've never slowed down before, it feels like a really weird choice to make because you're so used to reactivity. But you are more likely to interrupt the adaptive pattern or the trigger by responding in a way that supports your goal to face your trigger and widen your window of tolerance whenever you pause before choosing. So here's that process again. Awareness, feel, hold, use CPR if you need to. Notice the voice in your head. You're going to pause somewhere in there. It might not be right before your choice. It might be at the beginning before you come in awareness, and then choose. And you're going to have to practice this process over and over and over and over. You're rewiring your brain and you're rewiring your body's response to perceived threats. So when I tell you that you have to practice this, maybe there's a voice in your head that's like, why does it have to be so hard? Why does it have to take so long? The perfectionists might be thinking that there must be something wrong with me if I can't get it right on the first try, or how many times am I going to have to do this process before I get it right? Okay. Maybe you don't feel like it's fair that you should have to practice this. Why should I have to do this? I'm not the one who caused my trauma. I'm not the one who caused my triggers. Why is it my responsibility? Just notice. Become aware, be present, hold yourself, love yourself, notice those stories, choose. Like you can do that even with this like meta thing that we're talking about. So what if you don't know the past stuff that's bringing up present moment feelings? What if you just don't have a clue? That's the million-dollar question. Do we have to remember, relive, or recount traumatic events and experiences to heal from them? No, we don't. You're not required to go into your past and remember every fucking little thing in order to heal. But you do have to change how you relate to your body's sensations. This requires changing our relationship to our body and to sensation. And this is true whether your typical pattern is hyperarousal, meaning you're feeling everything, or hypoarousal, meaning you're feeling nothing. Whatever it is that you're feeling, you're changing your relationship to your body and to that sensation. So, the main reason we avoid triggers is because it is likely that there is a child part, there's a kid on our bus who is triggered, and it's not our adult self. Your highest, wisest, most loving, and trusting part of you is not triggered. It's like another part. The child part doesn't know how to hold their self because they are a child. The child doesn't know that they can feel hard things and still be okay. So we stop feeling and we get reactive instead. The adaptive survival pattern comes up to protect us from the feeling. So we dissociate or we avoid or we blame others for not posting a trigger warning and call people harmful, which, by the way, I don't believe in trigger warnings. But if you can trust yourself, to hold yourself and love in love and compassion when you're feeling hard feelings, would you need to avoid it? Would you need to dissociate? Would you need to run away? Would you need to blame somebody else or yourself? Would you need to get defensive? You only need avoidance, dissociation, running away, blaming, and getting defensive because those things protect you from feeling the hard thing. But if you knew you could feel the hard thing and be okay, you would be less likely to need these adaptive patterns. So the goal is not to stop the feeling. The goal is to feel it without fear. And that also means feeling it without judgment and feeling it without shaming yourself and feeling it without blaming yourself or blaming others. You're just feeling whatever it is that you're feeling. So feel the trigger. Feel the overwhelm, the fear, the anger, the sadness, the disgust, the anxiety, the threat. If you're not feeling it, you're not healing it. It's a really common, I don't know who originally said that, but it's really common in this space. It's also important to remember that nothing is black and white. Remember, if you find yourself in that binary of like, oh, there's only two options, it's either this or it's this, that's a clue. You're probably in an emotional flashback. You're probably triggered. As we heal, we begin to learn how to leave room for complexity. We begin to notice that other things are possible besides this or that. So, for example, Maybe something is outside your window of tolerance right now. Your reticular activating system will scan your entire environment every day to confirm to you over and over and over, yep, that thing's outside your window of tolerance. You can't handle it. And then you try that thing and it doesn't work out. And you're like, ah, see, I told you. I told you you shouldn't have done it. I told you it was outside your window of tolerance. Okay. If you leave room for the possibility for another outcome, okay, maybe it's outside my window of tolerance right now, but I'm open to the possibility that it won't always be outside my window of tolerance. Now you have just opened yourself up to more possibilities. There are other options besides either I do the thing or I don't do the thing. There's also a difference between avoiding triggers and setting healthy boundaries. Okay, you can feel triggered. And also, the person that you're triggered by isn't a bad or harmful person. So, when I say there's a difference between avoiding triggers and setting healthy boundaries, I mean, like, I think I might talk about this later. I can't remember. But, like, you're allowed to cut somebody out of your life, but chances are you're still going to get triggered in other relationships. So, just cutting that person out of your life isn't what solves the trigger. You're allowed to not give the people who harmed you access to you. Right? Like that's a healthy boundary. And also, you're still going to get triggered in other relationships, and that's still your responsibility to work on. So, here's some more complexities that deserve lots of space. You also have agency. Okay. You are not required to face and heal everything. And I know that might be shocking coming from someone like me who's all about healing. But you are an adult with agency. And if there is a person or an event or a feeling or a whatever, and you're like, no, I don't want to face it. I don't want to deal with it. That's okay. That doesn't mean that you're a bad person. That doesn't mean that you're not healing right. You are an adult with agency. So you get to choose, would it be for my best and highest good to face this thing? Or does it not feel like it's possible for me to face this thing? Or maybe it's not possible right now, but I'm open to the possibility that one day it could be. Also, you are not a failure if you get triggered and then react unconsciously. I still get triggered and react unconsciously. Everyone does. There's nobody who like up levels to the point where they never get triggered and they never have an unconscious reaction. That's not even the goal. You're not a harmful person, even if you inadvertently cause harm when you're triggered. Right? This is like black and white shit that people on the internet say all the time. You have one hot take and everybody's like, you're a harmful person. And it's like, no, your perception of this is that it's harmful because you probably have your own story and your own lived experience that's being, poked or triggered by what I'm saying. But what I'm saying doesn't make me inherently a harmful person. It just means that you think I'm harmful because of what I've said and what it's poking at you. So here are some more ways to meet yourself with compassion when you're triggered. Give your kid on the bus or your inner child some reassurance. Let them know that you love them unconditionally. You believe that this is hard or scary for them, that you're here to protect them and comfort them, that you're an adult and you have access to resources and skills and language that the child version of you didn't have access to. When we're triggered, we often use statements that use words like always and never. So we can be like, oh, I always get triggered by this. I'm never going to get better. That kind of eternity thinking almost always means we're triggered. So you just have to, again, ground yourself in the present. Okay, this trigger is going to pass just like every other time I've ever been triggered. It's not always happening. It's not that I'm never going to get over it. This is just what's happening right now. It will pass. You can remind yourself, I'm an adult now. I am not a child, because it's often our child parts who get triggered. I have resources, skills, and safe relationships now that I did not have when I was a child. Also, refuse to hate, shame, or abandon yourself. Refuse it, even if it's really common for you to do that. Refuse to do that. Instead, channel any anger that you feel toward yourself, if you feel anger at yourself, towards your inner critic. Because the voice of your inner critic is almost always the voice of a parent or caregiver that has mutated into your inner voice, or it's an amalgamation of, like mom and dad and this like awful fourth grade teacher or whoever. And it's like all of those voices together combine, and that's what your inner critic sounds like. So if you feel anger, instead of being like, oh, I'm such a bad person, I'm so shameful, this is awful, channel it towards your inner critic. Like, no, mom, fourth grade teacher, dad, I'm not a horrible person. I'm not always fucking up. Like, you don't get to say that to me anymore. I'm not going to listen to this narrative in my head anymore. And you can replace with positive qualities and accomplishments, such as, oh, look, I came into awareness more quickly this time. Or I felt this really uncomfortable sensation in my body and I stayed present with it and it passed a lot more quickly than I thought it would. Or I have language to describe what I'm experiencing now, so I don't feel so crazy and I can actually talk about it. Seek support. Shame isolates. Notice if you're isolating yourself. Notice if you're wanting to hide parts of yourself, if you're afraid to speak up about it or share about it because you're afraid you're going to be judged, because you're probably judging yourself, and choose to seek out support anyway. You need intimate relationships where you can share about your triggers and flashbacks and talk and feel your way through them. This is how we have those disconfirming experiences. Refuse to go into patterns of perfectionism. If you deal with perfectionism and you get triggered, there may that the inner critic voice may be like, oh, you did it again. You're never going to get this right. You're always going to be this triggered and you're never going to figure it out. And you're just going to stay stuck and you're going to be in the same place year after year after year because you're not figuring it out. Just refuse to do that. Like, you're allowed to notice when you have those thoughts and be like, oh, thanks, inner perfectionist, for letting me know that you need some attention, right? That's how you can meet yourself in that. And then be patient. Recovery takes time. It takes so much time. I'm still in recovery. I plan on being in recovery for the rest of my life. I don't call it the healing journey anymore. I'm not on a hamster wheel trying to fix things. When things come up, I deal with them. If nothing's coming up, I'm not dealing with it. I know I'm going to make mistakes. I know I'm not going to be perfect. I know I'm going to get triggered. I know I'm going to be reactive. I just know because I'm a human that those things are going to happen. And I may not always be able to control those things, but I can control how I feel about myself and how I talk to myself in those moments. So Pete Walker says, be patient with a slow recovery process. It takes time in the present to become unadrenalized and considerable time in the future to gradually decrease the intensity, duration, and frequency of flashbacks. Real recovery is a gradually progressive process, often two steps forward, one step back, not an attained salvation fantasy. Don't beat yourself up for having a flashback. Let's take another, yeah, we'll do 5 minutes. So come back at 3 after the hour. What a weird number to come back to. Yeah, we'll do like 3, 4 after the hour. If you need a break, does everyone need a break or do you just want to go straight into the Q&A? Because it hasn't been that long since we took our last break. Give me a thumbs up for break and a thumbs down for no break. Katarina says no. Nicole says no. Sinead says no. Danielle says no. And I can't see anyone else. Okay, then we're not taking a break.